Welcome to Death Hauler, Season 5, When Bad Animals Go Bad. With your hosts, the Reverend Dr. Death and Lyraina. This season will include love.
Do you know how your husband died?
Oh, yes. I killed him.
Transformations. And certified good boys and girls.
Cujo, what are you growling at?
Remember, when you're in Death Hauler, listener discretion is always advised.
Bad bitch go bad, dang!
Everyone, welcome back to Death Hauler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always, or well, it's been a while, but is my co-host, Lyraina. Are you back from the exorcism that occurred?
You can say I have been exorcised. I am free of the demons. And yeah, I mean, you know, without going into detail, you know, sorry, we had to take a hiatus. We had to take a long hiatus. We tried to keep recording while life was happening, and life was lifing real hard.
Or afterlife in your case.
Afterlife, yes. And yeah, we're back. Here we are. We knew we'd be, I know I told you, I was like, hey, we just got to take a break because I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know where I'm going to be studio-wise, afterlife-wise. And so I said, July, August. And then as July came along, I'm like, I think middle of August is going to be, that's the sweet spot. So here we are.
Here we are, back at it again. And forgive the both of us if this episode's not as tuned in as the previous ones, but we've literally not recorded. So
we've not recorded. We've not talked about it. Nothing. We have watched scary movies though. Like we've been keeping up with that.
And that's what we're going to do in this episode. We are going to cover a movie that fits in the most famous movie that fits in the whole animals attack genre, which, you know, is going to be pretty easy to guess, but, I thought it'd just be fun to kind of give our opinions on whatever, you know, horror movies we've watched this year, like new ones, and kind of do like a slasher pass type review of them really quick before we get into that movie.
Yes.
Which I don't think is going to be very much on Uranus end, but again, afterlife issues, they kind of sucked up all of her time. So she wasn't watching as many as I did.
Oh, definitely not.
All right. Well, having said all that, and this should be your hint about what we're covering this episode. If it's not already on the, you know, little ticker, you know, from where you download the podcast, but grab a bucket of chum, strap yourselves into your favorite fishing rig and get ready. Cause we're all going to need a bigger boat as we cover Jaws from 1975. But first, if you're enjoying the podcast, we'd appreciate it if you would take the time to like, comment, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps get more visibility on podcast listening. It helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Hauler Pod, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Hauler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who will be listening. Hopefully, you see this and come back, and hope you enjoy the show. 2025 horror releases. This has been a pretty stacked year for horror. That the superhero genre has just collapsed in on itself, and every single movie that Marvel has put out is bombed, and DC only barely scraped out a win with Superman. Horror is the one that's been keeping everybody up lately, so I mean, it's pretty big. hopefully they continue that trend whenever they start getting their footing back underneath them, but we'll see. But there's a lot of movies that I haven't even seen yet, but I mean, there's several to go over just in what I've got here that I do know that I've watched, and I know that Uranus seen some of them too.
Well, I think what's helping the most, I mean, I think horror films are always going to be it, especially if you put out a good horror film. But I think what the big thing is right now is superhero fatigue. I saw a whole article on it, and I said, you know how you see a news article and you're like, oh my God, I have to listen or I have to watch that because it'll be like a newborn baby killed by a bunch of so-and-sos and you're like, wow. And then you find out like never was a newborn killed. It's just an article that kind of an attention grabbing title, you know?
But yeah, it's all in the headlines.
I've never seen such a headline that made more sense without even getting into the article. Superhero fatigue.
I've heard several people argue that it's not superhero fatigue so much as bad movie fatigue, but the problem is they've been hand in hand. Like, yeah. Literally, they've been the shittiest movies produced for the past 3 or 4 years. If you're a Marvel fan, since Endgame, and I would even argue Endgame itself was not great. Mm-hmm. It's Marvel's been producing some shit. Like, the only two big hits they had on their hands that I enjoyed was the Spider-Man Homecoming that had the return of, you know, Tobey Maguire and, you know, and then we had the Deadpool movie, which was, you know, I mean, good because it brought in Hugh Jackman and had all, but both of those were based upon nostalgia. If you really looked at the movies, they were all right. Like, as far as like the plots and everything, but it was really the nostalgia factor. But all the other movies they came out with just woke. And I know people hate that term, but like, it's girl bosses. It's diversity for diversity's sake. There's no strong, like, real main central themes. Like, even and the good characters, quote unquote, the good characters, as in like, I'm trying to remember that it's not Iron Man, but like the Iron Heart, I guess is the name of that series. The main character is a black girl who has to resort, even though she's the most brilliant person on the planet, has to resort to stealing to get money, which is not only derogatory and offensive against black people. It's also, you know, not a good character and nobody should be idolizing her.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you in where you're saying, I don't think it's superhero fatigue. I think it's bad movie fatigue because this is not part of 2025, not even close, but we had the animated Spider-Man Across the Universe, or Spider-Verse, excuse me?
Yes, the Spider-Verse movie.
Fucking amazing. It's like Sony knows how to put out a superhero movie.
Well, yeah, when they're not trying to make spinoffs with the bad guys or whatever, but a lot of people do admit those movies are entertaining if they're not great movies. I mean, they're so bad, they're good. So, I mean, there's that.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah, it's superheroes are dying kind of the way the movies are, kind of the way, unless James Gunn kind of pulls it back out after Superman, but he's following up with Supergirl, so I don't know really how much that's going to help.
And it's so sad that I'm grunting over that because, like, it just already sounds like it's going to be bad.
Well, the smart play, and I don't know why he's not doing this, Superman, a Batman movie, and a Wonder Woman movie, and then branch out from those three because those are your main hitters. Everybody knows that about DC, that knows anything about comics. But he's like, well, I always like the underdogs and the B characters. That's fine. That you do great with them. I'm not going to. Polka Dot Man was the best thing in his James Gunn's Suicide Squad.
Yes.
And Das Malchin proved that he deserves to be, you know, like in movies like, you know, Late Night with the Devil. But having said that, regular folks that go to the movies don't give two shits about that, and you need to pull them in with a big name.
Yes.
You just do.
I concur.
So I don't know what his thinking is. I mean, creatively, I understand it, but, as far as, like, financially, since he's the head of that studio now, he should be at least putting on his financial cap a little bit and saying, we need to maybe steer over here and throw the B characters in and, you know, kind of give them some cameos and then branch off with those characters.
I hate to say it, but your minorities are not paying the bills.
Yeah, it's, and they lost a lot of goodwill with the niche, you know, nerds too. I mean, you know, especially Marvel, but
yeah,
regardless of all that, going back to our original point, horror movies always always get profits because they're filmed on lower budgets, as we always try to bring up, and they make way more than they, you know, than they were budgeted for the most part. There's duds out there, yeah. But I mean, and I don't know why studios still treat them like they're like the worst things ever. It's like, oh yeah, we made a bunch of money off Sinners, but it's one of those fucking horror movies. It's like, why? You just admit it. They're good. I mean, they're good money makers, and just stop treating them like they're, you know, as much as I hate this statement, the redheaded stepchildren of your movies.
Well, okay, come on. There is one studio for sure. You and I both know does it right and profits off of their horror niche, and that is Universal Studios. They have taken the horror community and provided to us and ran with us.
That's because they know that that's what got them started. It's Warner Brothers who has made the most money this year with their horror movies, mm-hmm. with two big ones in theaters recently. That still's like, well, we got Superman. It's like, fuck you. Yeah. Like, it barely made a profit if it did make one. Admit that those movies are great, and they actually are, to their credit, but also it's bad. Getting into weapons, just a smidge before, I mean, we'll save it for later. They're talking about a prequel with the main bad guy in that movie, and I'm just like, no. Like, I get the reason behind it because it'll be an instant moneymaker, but I can't see that being worth a damn. Like, I mean, that's the wrong way to milk a movie.
We keep skewing off topic, but I have to throw in, I know there are memorable Superman movies. I am not ever going to take away from the originals, okay? But Brightburn was an amazing movie.
And it was at least produced by James Gunn. So, yes. I mean, you know, and he got his start in Troma. So, like, I mean, that whole studio was based upon, like, shit horror movies that, like, you know, were just fun to watch. Now, he is contributing to the horror genre and the superhero genre. In the fact that he's getting Mike Flanagan to write a Clayface movie. Now, I don't think that that is necessarily the financial thing that, you know, the best financial decision, because who the fuck is Clayface without Batman? But if anybody's going to make a good movie out of Clayface, it's going to be Mike Flanagan, because that man can basically write anything.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. I just don't know how it's going to turn out, because it's kind of weird that they're making a single movie out of Clayface, but whatever.
Let's see where they go with it and hope for the best.
I mean, that's generally what you do with all this stuff, but these are not any particular like release order. I just kind of threw them together, like as far as like I was looking through there, so we'll just go through them. The movies this year that I looked at that I've seen, and there's several that I'm still wanting to watch, like as far as needing to go back and watch them, like Clown in the Cornfield. I heard it wasn't the greatest, but I want to see it just to kind of have an opinion on it. But the first movie that I remember watching this year was Companion. If you don't remember what that movie was, it's been a bit. It's about the robot with the AI that gets Jack Quaid stars in it, and he turns like they turn the AI off, or to the where the limitations on the AI off, and it ends up, the sex bot basically ends up killing people. There's more to the movie than that, and it gets into a lot of stuff, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody to watch, but I actually enjoyed it.
Oh, it was, now, I've seen it, and it was, okay, pardon me, but this movie wasn't very horror film to me. Thriller?
It was thriller. It was very a comedy emotional. In portions. What? Yeah. I think that it was kind of funny at parts. Like, it wasn't, I mean, it's not going to be like some of these other ones that we're going to describe, but yeah. I mean, there was an element to it that was a little more of the absurd, like, you know, but I agree with you on the emotional side, because when you get to when you get the reveal and you start realizing what's going on, there's a lot behind that. And it's an allegory for basically toxic relationships and basically somebody who's dating a narcissist, in other words. That's really what the movie's about. But what would you, do you recommend people watch it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. definitely recommend watching it. Definitely. Are we slashing or passing right now?
Yes.
Definitely a slash.
The slash for me. I think it's worth watching. I think it's one of the better entries that we've had in a long time. And that, especially considering the fact that, like, I think it's a better movie than Megan. Like, I liked Megan all right, but I think, I mean, and I didn't see Megan 2 yet, and I know that's, like, out this year, but I think that Companion's a better version of that type of movie where you got, like, a killer robot, basically.
Megan's becoming too much of a thing now. Whoops.
Well, it's also becoming what it... it's moving away from what it originally was. It's more like it's more superhero-ish too. Oh. It's like it's going down that route. That's what I heard about Megan 2.0 is that she's basically like, you know, it's almost like an anime, like superhero vibe to it as opposed to like a horror movie.
I don't think it's even like a anti-hero, which would be a little bit better.
Yeah, well, they portray, there's like two different versions of Megan in the new movie or something. Like, one's like the original design, one's the one that was brought back or whatever from, if you watch the original movie, that's kind of a spoiler, but she gets like locked into like some kind of like, almost like an Alexa type device or something. She begs, or because they need her, they build her a new body. And so the one that's been trapped is fighting the, like one of the original models or something like that. So that's kind of the gist of it.
Ugh, I don't know. You know what? I can't even say anything. I have not even seen the first one. So shame on me as a movie watcher. One, two, as a horror film watcher, but three, I don't know. Based on what I'm seeing at Universal Studios, cause I went already four times this year or more. And everything with Megan is kind of just,
It's the first movie's all right. Like I mean, that's not related to this, but I would recommend people see the first one, but I've been hearing so much bad about the second one that I'm really hesitant to even watch it.
Yeah.
Another movie after Companion is the movie Drop that came out. Now I would not list this as a horror movie. Technically it is definitely a thriller movie. I mean, it is more like, you know, one of those edge of your seat, like, somebody's threatening to kill. I mean, this is in the trailer, but this woman goes on a date and then she gets a video sent to her phone of somebody having a mass killer at her sister's house. I think it's her sister who's babysitting her kids. And basically the person says, you're going to do what I say or they're all going to die. And so she's being manipulated through the messages are coming through her phone and everything else while she's on this date with this guy. And the movie slowly reveals what she has to do and why the guy's important to it and all that. It was entertaining. It's actually made by the same guy who made Happy Death Day. So and Freaky. So I mean it doesn't have any of that humor really that was in those movies, okay. But at the same time it's a good little thriller type movie. I mean, I enjoyed it.
I mean, I didn't have the thankfully did not have the ability to be a single mom, but I hear that it is hard out there for a bitch. Could you imagine finally getting a date on what you think is somewhat of a normal person? You're at a nice restaurant, you got dressed. I mean, this is on a woman's end, how much we put into this, you know, and energy, and then you're like, I gotta kill this guy.
Yeah, well, there's that, and there's also the fact they established this the first few minutes of the movie, so it's kind of a spoiler, but not really. Her husband that she had before that was the, you know, the kid's father, he died in front of her. It's throughout the movie whether or not she had a hand in killing him or because he's threatening to kill her and the kids. So it's kind of up for debate whether through most of the movie, whether he killed himself or, you know, she did it. But she had that traumatic experience. And this is the very first person that she decided to date after, you know, like recovering from all that.
Oh, my God.
But I would give it a slash. I mean, it's worth watching. Just know that it's more of a thriller. There's no supernatural anything to it.
Yeah.
And it's not even really like a horror movie in the sense of like a slasher. It's literally like one of those whodunits, like, you know, like who's calling her, who's doing this, why are they doing it? And then watching the tension build is like, she's, you know, more and more complicated. She's trying to get out of it, but every time that she tries to get out of it, something even worse happens because the person's like,
yeah.
You fucked up, you know, that sort of thing. So This is a movie we both watched 28 dicks later. I mean, years later.
28 inches later.
28 inches later. That's the main title of the movie.
Oh, my God.
I am so torn on this movie, and I know that you probably have a better opinion of it than I do, but let's just go back for the people, you know, in case they did, they, you know, and it's been a bit, so, and, you know, even for us, when we reviewed 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later, we loved both those movies. Now, of course, Days is the best.
Oh, yes.
Weeks has its moments that are really good whenever the shit hits the fan, especially that intro scene. Intro scene in Weeks is so good, where they're like, guy's just booking it after he like basically leaves his wife to die or whatever. Oh, it's God. Amazing. But 28 years, it's got a good first half when it's the father and the son. And then whenever it goes past that, and then you start getting the weird doctor stuff, and then the memento mori, and then, like, the ending that has divided the whole entire fucking internet, which is Power Rangers, is, I mean, without giving a spoiler, but kind of giving one.
Yeah.
The Power Rangers type ending, which does tie into a really creepy subject. I don't know if you're aware of this, but apparently in Britain, the character they're modeling the main guy the Power Rangers after was a major film producer for children's shows who was notorious for being a pedophile. So
I'm not surprised. I was expecting that, shockingly.
So the theory is that, you know, he was a groomer. So the kid, you know, running into that group is a really bad thing. But anyways.
Oh, now that's making sense. I mean, I just knew that that person that he ran into was the kid from the beginning of the film that survived and then became a masochist.
And the television show that child was watching at the beginning of the movie, the Teletubbies.
Oh, God.
The real life bad guy who was the pedophile, the chronic pedophile that never got brought to justice because everybody knew he was doing it, but it was because he was so powerful. That was one of his main shows that he had was the Teletubbies.
Okay, I told you this. This is getting past the pedophilia, but I told you there was holes in the story of not just holes in the story of 28 years later, but they went back on what these zombies are.
Not only that, I'll let you finish that statement, but I'm going to say this. They retconned, for anybody who wants to know, they retconned a lot of 28 Weeks Later out of the continuity.
You'll have to point that out to me. Yeah, you're going
to
have to point that out to me because I missed that. But I will tell you, okay, we firmly agreed on them being infected humans because anything can take them down that would take down a normal person. But yet we had a zombie that was hanging upside down for who knows how many weeks, months, whatever, gut open, guts out, fighting for its life, ripping apart literally because its torso is like turning so much because it's trying to get out of its binds, but it didn't die?
Well, yeah, and if you just figure in the whole human element, like the blood pooling in its head would have probably killed it.
Yes.
So, yeah, they retconned that, or they changed that. They brought in, just like Left 4 Dead, I believe is the name of that game on PC.
Oh, yes, I play that game.
Yeah, just like that, and, you know, Resident Evil and some others, they introduced the idea that the zombies mutate over time. So now there's alphas who can't be brought down by anything because their adrenaline surge is so, like, massive, along with their dicks, that they, you know, can basically do anything.
Oh, my God. It was so unnecessary.
And they also grow to be, like, about 7 feet tall and blah, 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 blah.
They're the alphas. Also, they're fucking swole as hell. Like, they are ripped, okay? And not only that, but, like, they can get other zombie bitches pregnant. Which kind of goes in with the human factor.
Yeah, it does, and it's weird, too, because it's... I mean, the idea is, this was interesting to me in a way. It kind of went along with the allegory about AIDS, but like the placenta if the baby is taken in time and taken properly, the blood barrier there is not crossed so that the kid's not infected right off the bat. Like it grows to be a normal kid inside of the mutated rage virus female. But as long as it doesn't have a vaginal birth or whatever, it did.
The baby fell out.
Well, anyways, that's kind of going against normal because it's supposed to be a C-section. But anyways, as long as they get to it in time, it can be prevented from having the virus, like, you know, and be normal.
And we don't know what the mom is eating. She could be eating worms like the other zombies were, which will keep people alive. It's protein.
But you know? Here's what don't make any sense about that. How were the fatties still able to be fat on worms?
Yeah. Weren't they? I thought they were swollen from something. I thought it was explained that they were swollen from something specific.
There's a lot in that movie that there's I just so feel like kind of just thrown against the wall like a, you know, monkey flinging its poo, you know, like it's bad.
There's a lot in this movie. There's a lot of things that get skipped. There's things that don't get answered. Lord Vader. Sorry, guys. My dog. Anyways, and it happened. I'm going to give my slasher pass right now. I am going to give this a Stockholm Syndrome slash because of the series it belongs to.
I would say the same thing. If you were invested in the series, you're at least for there's portions of this movie. I would say 3/4 of this movie can kind of give you enough to be happy with it. Mm-hmm. It's the ending. It's the big, long, drawn-out section with the doctor and the memento mori that drags on forever at one point that really detracts from the movie. And I get some people saying, oh, it was so beautiful seeing Ralph Fiennes, you know, like pontificate about, like, the nature of life and death. That's fine, but I was literally sleeping during those scenes. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, I was literally sleeping. Like, you know, my wife looked over at one point and was like, were you asleep? And I was like, well, I got enough of it to know that, you know, so-and-so, you know, had issues and blah, 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 without ruining anything. But it was boring the shit out of me. And I don't, and this is a critique outside of just the movie itself. I don't like how they handled the father-son dynamic because it started out good, but then there's a reveal and they totally like make the father out to be like this horrible person because of reveal. And I feel like unfairly too, given the circumstances of the movie, and maybe I'm a little bit too close to it myself, but I feel like, you know, it's like, okay, you made him out to be a bad guy just because of what he's got going on and like the stress he's under and all that. And then they totally remove him from the film.
Oh, yeah.
And he has no chance to redeem himself.
That was weird. I don't know. Like, this movie would be a pass. It was all over the fucking place. It is not what you would expect from a 28 days, weeks, years, months later situation. And I think a lot of people have the right to feel disappointed. Like I said, I gave it a Stockholm Syndrome pass because there's supposed to be two or three other films in the series.
Two more.
In which we are going to get, who's the main? Is it Sean? Oh God, what's his name? Murphy.
Cillian Murphy.
Cillian Murphy. Yeah. Sorry, I was thinking, I don't know why I was thinking C-I-A-N, Sean, you know? And I was like, I don't think that's right.
I was almost to say Cillian, but I'm like, no, it's Cillian because he's Irish or whatever.
Cillian, so. And he, not only that, he might be back in the films, but at minimum, he's going to be helping produce and or direct.
Yeah, the only thing that bothers me is this next movie in the series is directed by the same woman who directed the Candyman remake.
Ooh.
And that was woke as shit, and I'm really worried that she's going to make the next in the series woke as shit.
Yeah. So. All right, we probably should move on because we got quite a list and we're not even in Jaws yet.
Yeah, so anyways, yeah, there's issues, but bring her back. I don't think you've seen this yet.
Nope.
This one has decent horror elements. It is spooky at times. Overall, it's made by the same group, the same couple of guys that made Talk To Me. Did you ever watch that with the hand?
I don't know why I haven't.
You need to watch that, but I went into it thinking I would get that kind of movie, and it's not really that. It's also got allegory, you know, things to it, but it has good lore about demonic possession. I'll say that. It has really good lore that I've never, you know, that nobody has ever brought. And the way that they portray it in the movie is really well done. I can't really say that it's terrible. It just kind of like what I thought it would be and what it ended up being, especially compared to the previous movie, which I probably shouldn't have went into it with that. I kind of hyped it up more in my head than what I got, but it's still, I would still say a slash because it does have horror elements. A lot of people are liking it and I didn't hate it. It was just one of those things where I went in thinking I was going to get like a scare a minute and I liked the vibe of it, but like it got to a portion, like especially in the middle where like, I was like, okay, this is creepy, but it's not really like, I don't know, like one of the main characters, the main bad character in the movie was really annoying the shit out of me at one point in the middle of the movie. So I kind of got pulled back from it. It would have been a lot higher review for me or more enthusiastic slash if it hadn't been for that.
Yeah.
The Woman in the Yard, totally pass. Do not watch that movie.
I've heard so many bad things.
It is strictly, it is nothing but an allegory for suicide.
Oh.
I'm going to ruin the movie for people. I'm sorry. You just need it ruined. The Woman in the Yard is the woman's suicide. She ends up, it's established at the beginning of the movie. She's got like a lot of problems health-wise. She was in a car accident with her husband. He's dead. It goes back and reveals what happens. I'm not going to say that portion of it because, I mean, it's probably one of the most interesting parts of the movie. But every day she tells herself that she's going to, and this is ruining the end of the movie, but this is the big reveal. Every day she looks at the safe that her husband left, that's got a gun in it, and tells herself this will be the day. And then she goes through her day and doesn't do it. Well, the woman in the yard shows up and says, this is the day, and tries to get the woman to kill herself. At the end of the movie, the woman ultimately, you know, through her children interacting with her and, you know, letting her know that she's appreciated and all that, pulls her back from the brink. And the movie basically ends with her telling her children, she's like, the woman in black or the woman in the yard will be back. Maybe a lot, but as long as I, you know, have the strength, she won't ever, you know, have control over us. Basically meaning that she'll always have that, you know, the depression and the suicidal thoughts come back to her. But as long as she has support, she'll fight it off. It's a fine message, whatever, but it's a dull movie, so yeah. Pass. Destination Bloodlines, total slash. It pays off the series.
Oh, I've heard good things, yeah.
The kills are more CGI based, and I wish that they were more practical. But that aside, there's some inventive ones in it. They bring back the log truck several times in the movie. If you're still, you know, tortured by that whole thing, Tony Todd gets a very good send off in this movie. It was literally the last thing he filmed before he died, and he's literally speaking to the audience. Like the producers were so nice. They were like, they saw he was sick and they were like, basically like, we want you to ad lib. Just tell the audience what you want them to hear.
Yeah.
And he has this big long speech about live your life, you know, make sure that you're, you know, enjoying every day. I'm going to enjoy every day that I have left. And when he says that, you kind of get goosebumps knowing that this was his final film. So definitely worth watching. If you like the series, I would still say that probably 2 is the best in the series because we never got around to reviewing them. 1's my next favorite after that. I don't think I ever watched 3 and 4 enough to really get attached to them too much. And then, of course, this one. So,
yeah.
Next movie after that's Until Dawn. It's almost a pass. I'm going to give it a slash for people who like, you know, kind of like mixed genres. And it's got, I mean, just because of the nature of what the movie is, it's got a slasher in it, it's got supernatural horror, it's just got a good mix because it's based on the video game Until Dawn.
Okay.
The concept of the movie is the people are reliving the same day over and over again, a la, you know, Groundhog's Day or Happy Death Day.
But was the heat of the moment.
Yeah, that sort of thing. but each time that they come back, they're more and more damaged in ways, kind of like, you know, Happy Death Day. So
yes.
They've got a finite amount of times before they're actually dead. And then it goes from there. It's a good concept. It's just, there's two problems with it. It's it's not as well executed as it could have been, even though it's a fine movie and I wouldn't mind, you know, rewatching it at, you know, at all. But I happened to watch it on the same day as I watched Sinners.
Oh.
And you don't want to watch anything the same day that you watch Sinners, or you're going to hate the fuck out of whatever you watched other than Sinners.
Yeah, because so I heard, you know, Sinners. Everyone's like, you need to watch it. You need to watch it. And I have not. Even my boyfriend's like, you need to watch it. And I'm like, and he has not watched it. So he's been trying to watch it with me. I've been horrible. Okay.
But yeah, it pales in comparison, but anything really this year would, so we'll just leave it at that. But it's a very meh slash on that one, you know. Yeah. Death of a Unicorn, because I know we both watched this, because yes, you told me to watch it.
Yes, I did.
Same kind of thing, like Until Dawn, like it's fine. Mm-hmm. Until Dawn is more entertaining to me, and I almost want to say this is a meh on the past side, because I think that people enjoy it to a certain degree, but like it's so goofy and like the tone is so like a roller coaster. Like it tries to be horrific one minute, and then you got Paul Rudd, you know, like who's always going to joke it up, you know, which is yes, fine. That's what we love about him. But like it's just, it never hits a good horror comedy like middle ground. It's not like Shaun of the Dead, where there's horrific stuff happening, which is scary, but the main characters are funny. It's like goofy as shit, and then, oh, they're really getting tore apart by these unicorns. Yeah. And it's like, okay.
I particularly liked Death of a Unicorn. I thought the CGI was fucking horrible, specifically for the baby unicorn.
Yeah, it looked bad at parts.
It was awful. I was like, what the fuck is this? I don't know if I can make it through this movie. I made it through the end. I thought that the bigger, the mommy and the daddy unicorns were better.
They were much better designs, yes.
Yes, way more work went into them. I thought it was, I don't know. I don't know why I liked this movie. I just did. I mean, there's a lot of things I did like about it. There's some really bad parts. I thought the mom was pretty funny. I forget what the actress's name is. I know she used to be married to David Duchovny.
Oh yeah.
I thought she was pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's actually got some decent comedy in it, but like I said, the comedy like is so like the way it's just so uneven, like compared to what they're trying to do on the unicorn side. Yeah. Like I mean, Taya Leone is the main actress. Yeah. And she's actually still fairly attractive for her age. I gotta give her credit.
She aged very well. She does not look like she's had a ton of work done. Good on her, you know?
And I'll give credit to Will Poulter, who plays kind of like the science douchebag son. Mm-hmm. Like, if anybody, you know, like is used to some of his other portrayals, like We Are the Millers, where he just plays a complete dumbass. Like mm-hmm. This is the 180 from that, where he's like super smart, but he's also a cocky jerk or whatever. He actually does a pretty good job in his role. I'll give him credit for
I
that.
I thought so too. Yeah. It's a slash for me. It's not like definitely watch it. I just don't go in with a bunch of expectations. I think I appreciate the horrible CGI at the beginning, because it really dropped my expectations of this film. I was like, oh, this is going to be fucking awful.
Yeah. I got through it, but it was at the end of it. It wasn't something I really hated, but it was just kind of like, is this something I'd rewatch? Until Dawn's the other side of this, I will rewatch it. Although I was kind of about it.
Yes.
Death of the Unicorns on the side. Like I saw it once. And I'll give you an example of a movie that I just, because I thought about this earlier, and this is a comparison I'm going to make. We talked about this movie already, Cocaine Bear. Cocaine Bear has the same problem with tone, like, you know, being like trying to be scary one minute, being a comedy most of the other times. I think this makes Cocaine Bear look like a better movie. I really do. I think by comparison, I think Cocaine Bear is a better movie.
100%. I mean, if we were rating out of 5, I would probably get Death of a Unicorn, like maybe a 2.5 to 3, and Cocaine Bear would be up there 4 or 4.5.
Yeah, I mean, they're along the same lines. If you want that type of, I don't know what you want to call it, but that type of movie, that kind of vibe, they probably make a good, like, you know, back-to-back watch. I mean, comparing, I mean, just one after the other. Wolfman, that's the one that came out this year. The one that's like the, it's not really, he's not really a wolf. He's more like a, he's got some kind of weird, virus or something that he contracts from like this creature. I've not even watched all this movie. I have got through maybe 3/4 of it and I've tried my best to try to go back to it. So that should tell you that it's automatic pass for me. But like everything about the movie is just bad. Like, I mean, they have the actress in it. I'm pretty sure who plays the mom is the same woman who's in Weapons. She's amazing in Weapons. In this movie, she just kind of sucks. And like the werewolf lore is not that great in it. And I just, there's nothing really to recommend it. Like, it does not live. I wish Universal had not given them the rights to use that name. Like,
what the fuck, Universal? How many Wolfman movies do we have? I swear this is like, what, the third one or the fourth one?
Well, just go back to if you want a remake, it's perfectly good. The Benicio del Toro movie. It's awesome. Like, there's no reason that we should have got this piece of shit.
No reason.
Here's the thing. If we got this movie and it hadn't been called Wolfman and they called it something else because the character's more like a Wendigo or something like that, I would have been fine with it because it's okay body horror. It's not the best, and we'll get to the best this year on body horror here in a few minutes, but like, it's okay, and it would have been fine, but that name and then the expectations that goes along with it, given Universal's history, it just destroys any idea that you'll enjoy this movie because it's like, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah.
So definitely a pass on that one. I will complete it at some point, but I'm not looking forward to it. Hard Eyes, which is the slasher movie that came out this year around Valentine's Day. Mild slash. It's got its moments. It's more of a comedy at times. But as far as as a new slasher, it's not the worst thing ever. You know how we looked the movie Valentine, you know how we felt, you know, kind of reviewing it, you know, the one that had, I believe it's David Boreanaz and some other people in it. It's along the same veins as that, you know, more of a modern take, but it's got its moments. So it's all right. A mild slash on it.
Yeah.
The Monkey, the Stephen King movie made by Oz Perkins, who made Long Legs, definite slash. Okay. I know there's people out there that don't like it. Now, I'm going to tell you this up front. It is a comedy. It is not. It is a dark comedy at that. The kills are extremely absurd. It's you could call this movie in the same vein as Final Destination. It has got to say, if we did a season like we talked about on death, you know, like death randomly going after people, The Monkey fits in that genre because like the way that people die in this movie is every bit as absurd as any of the Final Destination movies. And I love it. Like there's one woman in the movie. She ends up with a bunch of like pins and, other like, you know, pointed things in her face. So she goes and she like picks them out and you're like, okay, that's how she's going to die. No, she goes and picks those out and then she puts alcohol on them. She goes to the stove. The gas is not working. So she goes to light it up. The gas catches fire on the alcohol on her face, sets her face on fire. You're like, oh, that's how she's going to die. No, no, no. She runs outside in the middle of a rainstorm to try to put out the fire on her head. She's got a for sale sign in her yard to try to sell the house. It's got this big, long, pointed post at the end of it.
Uh-huh.
Runs headlong into it, and then it, you know, goes through her brains. That's the type of movie you're getting with a monkey, just constantly over the top, like death scenes. And like the main character is just like, what the fuck are we seeing? Like, I mean, there is flabbergasted as the audience. And I love every minute of it. And I know people watched it and were disappointed because they thought they was going to get another creepy movie like Long Legs. You're not going to get that. You are getting a very, very dark comedy that is very enjoyable if you go in with the right attitude. So I highly recommend it.
All right.
Sinners, double slash. If you watch any movie this year at all, you need to watch Sinners. I know it's being overhyped. I realize that, and I'm sorry. But I went into it with no expectations. I thought, just like everybody else, it's going to be woke shit, given the nature of what it's about and everything else. It is not that. If you, and this is giving away part of the movie, if you liked From Dusk Till Dawn, you were going to love Sinners. That there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Really? Like, I wouldn't feel like comparing the two would be.
It's the same fucking vibe. Like, okay. It's literally like you how just like Final Destination, or I mean, not Final Destination, just like From Dusk Till Dawn starts out as being like a crime thriller movie with the two Gecko brothers, like trying to, you know, like commit crimes. And then like the last third of the movie is this balls to the wall vampire movie. Same fucking shit with this. Like, okay. It's the same thing.
I also am being told that I need to watch this movie big time.
And the best parts of it, the way that they integrate music into the movie, the way they intercut like the importance of family, it is so fucking good. It is such a good movie. The vampires in the movie, because that's what's in it, are so good, and the lore behind them is different, honestly, than a lot of other vampire movies. I fucking love this movie, and it made Until Dawn just like, you know, a nothing movie, because I watched them the same day. You would not go wrong by watching Sinners. So okay. Watch it. Together. Very much a slash. If you like body horror, Dave Franco and Alison Brie, they are both great in this movie. You can tell the two of them have chemistry, you know, in their marriage outside of the whole thing. And it's, I love what they did with the movie. Like it's so nasty when they start like combining together, like in the movie, and the visual effects are really good. The story is creepy and has good cultish vibes to it. That's all I'm going to say. Highly recommend Together. If you like any, especially if you're a fan of like Cronenberg's The Fly or any movie like that, you need to watch Together. I mean, it is just worth watching.
Wow.
And then, I mean, it's my second favorite of the year. And then my third favorite, saving it for last, is Weapons. Just came out, made by Kreger, the same one who made Barbarian.
Oh!
It's a good movie. It has its creepy moments, but I'm going to warn anybody who goes into this who's actually a horror fan. It wasn't scary. It had some jump scares. The normies, they jumped. I saw them do it. I'm like, all right, yeah. Creepy face. Yeah. Okay. This movie had me laughing more than any fucking movie I've watched in years.
That's sad. And it looks so scary.
I know that sounds terrible, but it really did. Like, you got to remember Kreger. What did he work on? You probably don't know this, but what did he work on before he worked on Barbarian?
We talked about this. Shit. I don't know. You're talking about Zach Kreger,
the comedy show, The Whitest Kids You Know.
Oh, okay.
So if you have ever watched that show, particularly because it's all over the internet, the scene where Abraham Lincoln was up in the booth and he was, you know, harassing everybody in the audience, you know, he was just talking through the whole play, and John Wilkes Booth, you know, did what he did to shut him the fuck up. Mm-hmm. As absurd and dark as that comedy is, that is what this movie is. The last 10 minutes, if you were not dying laughing, watching the main bad guy get their comeuppance, I don't know what happened to you in your life, because it's not scary, and it is intentionally funny, and is one of the funniest fucking things I've seen in a long time.
That's a little bit disappointing to me.
Disappointing. Sure. Okay. I went into it thinking it was going to be a scary as fuck movie because that's how they advertised it. And I was highly disappointed. And then more I thought about it, I'm like, no, I actually enjoyed that movie, but they shouldn't advertise the way they did. Yeah,
we do love a horror comedy. So that will not upset me. I think with my expectations now being switched on it, I think I could very much enjoy it.
If you go into it knowing it's got a dark comedy, there is a character in the movie that I called on the internet, the Equate brand. Equate brand or Walmart brand, yes. J. Muse. There is a crackhead in the movie, and he's one of the best actors in the movie. But, I mean, he's a literal crackhead. But, like, he is every scene with him is hilarious. And, like, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, why are all these people fucking scared of this movie? Like, we even had, like, one of the attendees at the movie theater say that people had walked out because they were so tore up over the movie. And anytime I hear that, it automatically runs the movie for me, because there's no movie that's that good. Not even the original Exorcist. I'm sorry, folks, but it was not that scary. Maybe back in the day when they'd never seen something like that, but yes. Whatever. But I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm seeing these scenes with this crackhead who reminds me, like I said, of Jay Muse or whatever from, you know, Jay and Silent Bob. And I'm like, this is fucking hilarious. And then like his interactions with the cop that he gets, because that's the best thing about this movie. I'm going to tell people this up front. This movie is told over the course of like maybe it's a time span of a month or something, maybe only a week. It's kind of hard to gauge, but it's told through the perspective of like four or five different characters. So each character gives you a little bit more of the mystery of what's happening in the movie until you finally get to the end. And then the last character that you follow gives you the whole story. Yeah, or the finishing part of the story. So you're seeing the same events happen or the same time period happen from different people's perspective. So there's a scene where there's one of the cops who gets involved. He gets involved with the main character at the beginning of the movie, and then it shows his segment of it, and he has a bad run-in with a crackhead. Then the crackhead has his moment, and you see it from his side of things, and then it goes from there, and it's just really well told. It's just and there's one other thing that adds to the humor of the movie, and I know this is spoiling something, and I'm going to try to keep it like as spoiler-free as possible. There is a meme going around the internet showing this guy who's just repeatedly picking up dudes and like body slamming them. I think it was from some wrestling event, and it said the ending of anybody who's seen Weapons knows what I'm referencing with this. You will know what they're referencing, and it is hilarious when you keep seeing it, like in the movie. It is power drive after power drive after power drive this one character keeps doing, and it's just like, is it ever going to fucking stop? And it gets ludicrous to the point that you're laughing at it.
Oh, my God. I'm still stuck on the Equate J Muse.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Equate.
Okay.
I'm joking.
You got to be all fancy about it. Go to Target. And that's Target's version of it.
Yes. So dumb.
But, yes, if I really recommend Weapons, but it is not a scary movie. I mean, it might be if you've never watched a scary, but our audience is not that way. So you're going to go into it knowing it's a very dark comedy, and you'll be fine.
You know what? And if you disagree, let us know. I'd be interested. Like if I disagree, if I watch it and I disagree with Reverend, I'm going to be like, hey, I disagree with you, and I'm going to tell him why. It probably won't make sense because I don't know. I'm not the crazy cinemaphile of the two, but
you might, I mean, there are points where you might jump. There's one scene at the end that actually caused me to jump. And I was like, finally,
yes.
One of these scenes did it. But like, that was it, you know?
Yeah.
But anyways, that's what movies I've seen. There's still The Conjuring Last Rites that's set to come out. I don't have high hopes on that one just because the last one was bad, really bad. I don't even remember what happened in the last one because I got so bored in that movie that I literally checked out halfway through it. So
that's unfortunate.
There's like a couple more, I think, that are slated to come out this year, but somebody said that there's a remake of Witchboard that's like out right now for some weird fucking reason. And I know there's a bunch of streaming stuff. Like I said, Clown in a Cornfield, I've not watched it. Had a close friend tell me that they thought it was kind of just like a shitty throwback slasher. So that's where I'm going to go into it with a frame of mind, not like with a lot of hope, because I mean, those are a dime a dozen. And we know because we covered that season. So,
yeah.
But anyways, folks, I mean, just let us know what your opinions on those were or any that you've seen. Any that we might have missed that are worth watching. I mean, I try to go back at the end of the year and kind of catch the ones that everybody, you know, really talked about. Like last year, there were several that I hadn't seen, and a couple of them shot to the top of my list once I saw them. So, I mean, I'm always up for finding, you know, the diamond in the rough. But as of right now, Sinners, Together, and Weapons are the three that are you have to beat just because of what they are and how well they did it. So,
yeah. I was going to end this episode and make it one episode and release it.
Okay.
Because we're almost an hour. And then,
that's fine.
And then we'll roll into Jaws, which unfortunately for the listeners, they're going to get, well, fortunately and unfortunately, depending on what you want to get to, you're going to get this on Monday and you're going to get Jaws on Friday. So.
Fine with me.
Yep. All right. You want to close it out?
All right, folks. With that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.